Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Now, normally I would play some music or something like that, but today's, I don't know of another day like it on the calendar for Marines, and that is a day that we remember Marines who died and were injured in the Beirut bombing. On October 23rd, 1983. And so that's what we're going to do today. The Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Berger, and the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps, Sergeant Major Black, they just spoke virtually at an event that's taking place right now, going on live, practicing social distancing, of course, at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So I want to play those remarks to start the show. So this is General Berger and Sergeant Major Black. So I've got a, this just happened a few seconds ago, so don't hate me. I got to find the right spot in the audio. So, give me 1 second to find it. And then, if you've never heard it, I do an interview with a guy named Matt Gospodinovich, who was there that day. And so you'll hear that today. It's probably, the favorite interview that I've ever done, about Beirut, because he is such a character. And so let me find the right spot. And so you'll hear that interview. He's a guy from Louisiana and wanted to be a Marine, wanted to be a badass, and was in Beirut that day. He's Lance Corporal, arty guy, and an artilleryman. And so you'll hear him. Normally I'll find the keynote speech that gets that's given today. So this is that. And let me see if I can find.
Marry or did end up marrying.
So let me. That's a guy before them.
It's down.
We are honored to have General David Berger and Sergeant Major Troy Black as the givers of the 2000.
This is the introduction to the keynote speech.
In 20 Beirut Memorial Observance Address.
I know there are no words that can express our sorrow and grief over the loss of those splendid young men and the injury to so many others.
Thanks for allowing Sergeant Major and me to participate in this year's ceremony. Unfortunately, we can't be there in person with you this year, but Camp Lejeune and the surrounding community will always have a special place in our families. One of our sons was born there. A couple of them attended high school at Camp Lejeune, and even my daughter-in-law comes from there.
Mayor Phillips, city officials, thank you for hosting this event every year. Even if it's in a different format. Distinguished guests, members of the community, and most importantly, to the veterans of the Beirut Battalion. Their families and loved ones, welcome and thank you for joining today. It's an honor to be part of this memorial. 2MEF and the Marine Corps is so truly fortunate to call this community home.
When I thought about speaking here today, I reflected on the events of October 23, 1983. And it didn't take me long to think what I wanted to say because that event had really such a profound impact on me. I was a young second lieutenant in 1983, before Donna and I had even our first son. We just finished our time at 29 Palms, and I was the 81's platoon commander with 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines. It was a month-long combined arms exercise, and I thought I knew everything. There wasn't any ongoing war, so for my little window of the world, if you did well at a CACS, that was everything there was to know, or at least that's what I thought. And though we heard from the Vietnam vets in our ranks that there was so much more to war, all we knew was running around the desert for training. The bombing in Beirut quickly disavowed me and everyone else of any such thought. We knew the 24th Marine Amphibious Unit was in Beirut conducting a peacekeeping mission, but most of us thought it was fairly routine work they were doing. We didn't know about the ongoing attacks the 24th Marine Amphibious Unit was dealing with on a near daily basis. Marines who were conducting a supposedly peaceful security patrol who were harassed and attacked in the streets by protesters. Those of us whose only experience was CAC didn't understand the complexities of interacting with a hostile population that we weren't at war with.
The situation was so confusing, the Marines on the ground reported enemy firing in all directions from several different locations. Despite the chaos, Marines performed exceptionally. They only returned fire when they were authorized to do so, and they protected civilian populations, supported the Lebanese armed forces, and they stayed alert and ready to handle new situations. Throughout September and October 1983, the situation rapidly deteriorated. The Marines received a string of visitors to gain a first-hand account. Visitors ranged from congressional delegations, the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General P.X. Kelly, the Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral James Watkins, and Marine generals like General Gray and Navy flag officers like the commander of the 6th Fleet. All we saw was that it couldn't be that bad because all those senior leaders were visiting.
Although senior leaders recognized the precarious situation, the rest of us were unaware of much that was happening. When we heard the news from 6:22 a.m. on Sunday the 23rd of October 1983, our illusion of an easy deployment came crashing down. I suddenly realized the challenges of war, even on seemingly simple or routine missions. There was so much more than we could ever learn at CACS, and there was the human toll. I had yet to know death in service, but here lay 273 Marines, sailors, and soldiers killed by an unknown enemy. Servicemen just like me, same age, background, training, everything. The events of that day changed me. It changed me to forever challenge myself even more to be ready. There was always something extra I could do better to prepare myself and my Marines. These were all things that many others already knew in practice, but the bombing changed me in an instant from the other side of the world.
The impact of Beirut still shapes us today. Marines today remember the incredible acts of selflessness and sacrifice. Your Marine Corps and this community continue to pay homage and commemorate the lives lost, the families of the fallen, and the legacy left. We will never forget that their sacrifice was not in vain. Legacy matters. Every member who was present that day contributed to that legacy. We will always remember you and your families. And our Marines today carry on that legacy as they continue to train and deploy around the world to defend our nation and protect our freedoms just like they did in 1983. And we remain Semper Fidelis, always faithful.
So that is the keynote address that was given today by the Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Berger, and along with him, Sergeant Major Black, just a few minutes ago. The events going on right now in Jacksonville at Camp Lejeune. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to hear my favorite Beirut interview. It's one of the, you know, one of the coolest parts about hosting All Marine Radio is the interviews that I get to do, you know, and those interviews are with guys like Gospo. You get to meet him. And I remember meeting guys like Gospo when I was a kid, right? And they were my heroes. I mean, they were these bigger-than-life guys, and Gospo is one of those bigger-than-life guys with the, his Louisiana drawl and just the way he is. And so if you've never heard the interview, you're going to get a chance to listen to it. And he tells a story from the Lance Corporal perspective. You know, young guy over there doing his thing in his time as a Marine. And so so don't touch that dial. It's a wonderful interview, and he is emblematic of the 273 Marines, sailors, and soldiers killed that day. And on this day, we remember them. We remember that day. And for those of us who were alive in the Marine Corps at the time, I was at Officer Candidate School. You know, the head shaking. How could this happen? How could this happen? How could we be so asleep at the switch? And so that is echoed. That still echoes in our lives today. You don't see security treated in a cavalier manner. And I think for those people that understand the lessons of Beirut, that thing is, that lesson written in blood and not a small amount of it. I can remember Desert Storm. Marines got off the ships along the coast of Saudi Arabia, or they flew in and they went straight into the desert because of the, you know, the threat of terrorism and just the not sure. We know what we are sure of. We go out in the middle of the desert and we live like we live, which is what we do in the California desert. Anybody that comes near us, we will see. And if they're the wrong people, we will kill. And so that, and you see that over and over again. You see it in Iraq, you see it in Afghanistan. We know, you know, we take security change that day forever in an instant. And, but even that lesson is secondary to, to the lives that were lost that day, the families impacted, the children that would grow up without fathers and all of that. So, so we'll take a quick break and you're going to get to hear Matt Gospodinovich, one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, a larger-than-life figure here on a larger-than-life figure. I'm playing something someplace, and I don't know where. Maybe that? Yep, that's it. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back, and you'll hear Gospo. So don't touch that dial.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her.
Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference. For some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
So we continue, and this next interview, again, I set it up here before the break, but the but he's a bigger-than-life guy, and he was killed a little bit more than a year ago. He was killed in September of last year, and I can't tell you how sad that made me. The somebody sent me a message and said, "Hey, I don't know if you know this," and today we celebrate Gospel's life as well. The he's just a bigger than life dude, and he's going to talk about his experience both in Beirut and then coming home. So it's with great pride that on a day that we remember, a Marine Corps Day of Infamy, that I bring to you one of the favorite interviews I've ever done with a bigger than life dude, a guy who any of us would have been glad to go to war with. His name was Matt Gospodinovich, and here he is.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, let me tell you how you know something's gone wrong on the radio is that it is a bumper plays for an extended period of time. Yeah, that means like I don't really know what's going on, but something's wrong because the stuff ain't going right. So anyway, I think Matt's with us now. Matt, good morning.
Yeah, morning, man. This is Matt.
What the hell, man? I call you four times. You don't pick up the phone?
No shit. I'm sitting here, man, watching Fox News. It didn't ring. I don't know what's going on, man.
Really? All right. So, Matt, how do you say your last name?
It's Gospodinovich.
Gospodinovich. All right.
Yeah.
And watching Fox News. News sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, man. I mean, it is what it is. I'm behind Trump.
Yeah, man. Good luck on that deal, man. I'm not behind either one of them, man. Hopefully the country survives whoever the hell gets elected.
We'll be all right.
And then the two cops getting shot in their cars this morning.
That sucks, man. I was a trooper for like 7-8 years after I got out of the Marine Corps, and I was a deputy sheriff for several years, so I feel for them.
Why'd you stop doing it?
Man, it just wasn't... I wasn't exciting enough, I guess, man. I don't know. It got boring.
Oh, really? And then you left there to go do what?
Well, now I'm in the casino business.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Always something going on in the casino.
There is.
Really? Is it as exciting as... because first of all, the cast of characters that hangs out at a casino, that's a different group of the population, yes?
It is, man. There's casinos all over the country now.
Yeah.
You get a lot of old people, a lot of young people. Just it's just always something going on. It wasn't. I don't know. I just got bored being a cop.
So talk about, all right, so first of all, let's learn about you.
Yes.
Before we talk about Beirut. Born and raised where?
Born and raised in Biloxi, Mississippi. My dad was a shrimper. It's right on the coast. Biloxi's on the coast. I grew up working on a shrimp boat. And,
just like that Forrest Gump shit?
Pretty much, man. It's a lot like that, yeah. A little bit bigger town. It was a resort community. We're right on the beach on the Gulf of Mexico. But at that time, there's the big fishing industry. Fishing, shrimping, crabs, stuff like that.
Wow. All right. So not exactly like the movie, but, you know, not too dissimilar, right?
Not too dissimilar, no.
Okay. All right. So how does the Marine Corps get on your radar as a young kid growing up in Mississippi?
Man, it's just something I always wanted to do. I just used to love John Wayne. war movies. I went in when I was, I wish I still had it though. When I was 14, I wrote to a Marine recruiter. And, just for some information, and they sent a letter back, said, we appreciate your, interest in the Marine Corps, but since you're only 14, we'd like you to stay in high school and get a diploma and then come see us. And, they sent me a t-shirt and a decal, I think, but, I don't have the letter anymore, but that's what it did. I was, I think a junior, and when I turned 17, I went in and, saw the recruiter and said, sign me up, and, I delayed for almost a year, 11 months and some days, before graduated and then went to boot camp.
But it was simply you watching, war movies and that's how you developed your, so you never considered the Army? It was just the Marine Corps?
Nah, man. I've always been a Marine, I guess, even as a kid.
Wow. Let me tell you, I was the same way. I think tremendously influenced by those movies. And then I grew up in California, and then when I got down to San Diego, you know, you saw all these Marines, and they were always, they're always fit looking guys and, looked good in their uniform. I thought, yeah, those guys are the deal.
That was for me too, man.
Wow. Wow. All right. So you joined the Marine Corps what year?
1981.
81. You go to recruit training in?
Paris Island.
Paris Island. All right. And, so they make a man out of you. And, did you go in open contract?
I went in, I signed, I got a combat arms, and when I was in boot camp, at the end of boot camp, they sit you on a quarter deck and then, your senior reads off your, MOS. I got a 0800, which is basic cannon there. Then, you go to, Cannoneer School, you get, 0811, which is Field Artilleryman.
All right, so you do that, and then you get, assigned to, is that when you get assigned to Charlie Battery 110?
Right. Went to Charlie 110. I remember when I walked in the squad day, man, just got back from Panama for jungle training, and these are some rough looking guys, man. These are just what I thought it would be. They were in the back of the squad bay cleaning the M60 machine guns and cleaning weapons and everything. And, well, who are you? Told them, well, come here, boot. Let me show you how to clean a machine gun. So that was my first day at the battery.
You're living in the barracks, right? Living in the squad.
Right, back then. The whole time we had, squad bays.
Yeah, NCO. Hey, NCOs had their curtain, right?
Well, not for a while. They
Really?
They didn't have it? They commandeered the back end of the squad band, put a curtain there with the little corporal chevrons and sergeant chevrons hanging on. I think it was just a poncho liner, but yeah, they had it blocked off.
And that thing, but truth be told, though, that was sacred. You did not wander back there looking for shit, right?
Absolutely not.
No, there's sacred things in the Marine Corps, man. Once that poncho went up, you did not fuck. That might as well have been the Iron Curtain, man. You did not. You go jacking around.
Yeah, well, especially not a boot-ass private, you know. I got pretty salty there. You know, I could go talk to him, after a couple of years, but.
Not when you got there. What? Okay, all right, let's talk about this. So you get there, and what year is that that you get there? 1981.
That's going to be 81. Yeah, 81.
So you get there in 81. Beirut happens in October of 83. So talk to us about your 2 years in the fleet. Was it what you expected? And how'd you
do? Yeah, man, it was great. You know, we were in the field probably at least 2 weeks out of the month, 2 or 3 weeks out of the month, doing a lot of, you know, training. When I got there, we had the 105 howitzers, which, I mean, on the breach, they had like 1943 stamp, 1944. So these were, you know, World War II era guns. But
wow,
we got real good with them. We all liked them because it's small. You can move them around real easy and everything.
Right.
But, you know, they just, you learn everything, how to take them apart. And we did a lot of field ops. We go to Fort Bragg several times a year. You know, I've been at 29 Palms. We go to cold weather training, just regular fleet stuff, man, doing floats. We did NATO floats. A lot of good liberty, a lot of good times.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I've never been to the Med. I'm a Pendleton guy, so I've never been. Med floats look like something you dream about as a Marine.
The only Med I went on was to Beirut. I was on Austin. I didn't do. We did several NATO floats, but the only Med, which wasn't really a float, we got on in we got on in North Carolina and we went straight to Beirut.
Yeah, that wasn't a good one. The what's best Liberty port you were ever in?
Amsterdam.
What the hell?
Man, we got a week of Liberty in Amsterdam. We'd have formation at like 0700. You know, they'd take roll call and find out who's in jail or whatever, and first sergeant have to go get them, and then Liberty again till 07 the next day. That was a lot of fun, man.
Amsterdam. How the hell were you up in Amsterdam? That was the NATO flight?
That's where they dropped us off. I don't know. Yeah, it was a NATO. It was I think that was, it was a cold weather. It was Norway. We have pre-positioned guns and stuff up there that we have to go once a year, and we take them out and clean them, shoot them, and, you know, we train with the, whoever it was, Norwegians. And that was back still during the Cold War when we was worried about Russia coming across.
Yeah, we wanted a piece of those Russians.
Well.
And that's how we were. That's how we were going to get it.
Right.
All right. So you're doing that, and you're living life as a Lance Corporal, PFC.
Right. Yeah, man. Just having fun, man. Being a Marine, jarhead, dumbass, young, you know, full of cum, jarhead.
All right. Talk to us about. You guys get ready to go to Lebanon. What was the preparation like? Now you guys were going to go get in the middle of a shooting conflict. What do you remember about the preparation headed over there?
Well, man, it was pretty, we didn't have a whole lot of notice. It wasn't, I don't recall how long, maybe, a couple of months. And, we had just transitioned over to a new weapon system, the M198 howitzer, which is a 155, which is a lot more complicated, bigger gun, takes a bigger crew, shoots a bigger round, and is a lot more, you know, training to do. So we've been training our asses off on them pretty much constantly for the you know, after they swapped the guns out. So it was just more the same. You know, train, and I was excited. A lot of the guys were excited and everything, but the NCOs, mainly staff NCOs, the officers and all, were trying to calm my expectations down. You know, they said this is a political deal. You know, got to have a lot of discipline, self-discipline, and you know, we're probably not going to be any shooting, probably not going to be what you expect of it, but it turned out differently. But
right. So that's the lead up, and then you load up where do you guys load up? At Morehead?
Morehead City, yeah, Morehead City. Well, we get there, and you know, it's I guess a couple weeks was on a ship, and just more the same, more training. We did some. We had Amtrak's on the boat. He did some training, jumping Amtrak's off and on, and stuff like that. And then when we, you know, when we finally get there, they load us up on them landing boats, and we hit the beach, and then it's go time. You know, we get to our position there, we had a fire base, which is kind of reminded me of K-Sign, the pictures I've seen of K-Sign. It's kind of on a hill.
Right.
And, we get in, we just dig our guns in and start, fortifying the position and everything.
Well, man, hey, man, let me stop you. One thing that you notice, for those of us who've never been to Beirut, and you read about the Marines in Lebanon, I had no idea until I looked at it on Google Earth how small of an area that is. You guys were sitting at the airport, and it's not, 2 kilometers to the mountains that are looking straight down on the airport?
It's
amazing.
A little bit further than that, I think, but it's not much. We were right, our ass was facing the Med, and we were facing the Shuf Mountains there.
Right.
So we were right. It's a small strip. It's a small strip there.
Yeah. I got the map out, and I was like, holy shit, man. Everything you guys did is under observation from those mountains, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, that's something that was strange for a guy from Artie. Because when you shoot a howitzer, you there's what they call direct fire when it's hit it the way, when it's a broken arrow type situation where you just lower the barrel and shoot straight at the enemy. But Artie, you never see where your rounds are hitting. And there were many, many missions we shot that you could actually see because we're hitting, sniper positions or mortar guys or whatever, in the mountains. And, you could see where your rounds are hitting, which was pretty strange from an artilleryman's perspective.
From the V in the tarmac at the airport to, if you go straight west, I'm using my Google Earth, to the top of the mountains, it is 1.79 miles. What the hell? How about kilometers?
Perspectives.
You're right. 2.6 kilometers to the top of that ridgeline.
Well, it seemed further from them, but that's
pretty goddamn that's pretty goddamn close though, man.
Yeah, man.
Holy shit! No, I didn't realize it. Now that's if you go due west. It looks to me, now as I zoom in on this shit, closer to that, those Shuf Mountains are like right on top of the airport. Yeah, 2 kilometers, because as towards the southern part of the runway, the mountains swing towards the runway, and
right.
So it gets a little bit closer. And then they get further as you go to the north, wow.
Yeah, the BLT was on the other end, yeah.
Right. So, so tell us, when we look at, if you look at a picture of the airport, where were you, where was Charlie Battery and what were you guys doing?
We'd be to the left. We were about half, 1,000 yards, maybe 1,200 yards, to the left of the BLT headquarters.
Well, where the hell, where was the BLT headquarters?
Well, that way it was It was the airport terminal. It was the Beirut International Airport Terminal.
Okay.
And they, when we got there, they turned it into the BLT headquarters. So
okay, so as I'm looking at the V in the runways, right in the center of the V.
It would be, I don't know which direction-wise, but with the end of the runway, the mountains, curve in towards the end, it would be the other end. The BLT headquarters was, at the other end.
All right.
If it's still, I mean, I don't know if the
No, I'm just looking to see on a, like, I'm looking from an aerial view, and I'm looking down.
And if those are, I don't know if the airport's still there,
it's still there.
Now, if it is, or not, I mean. But that's where it was positioned at that time. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about, and so where were you guys relative to that? and what were you doing?
On the 23rd?
Yeah, on the 23rd. But you guys, did you guys rotate around? I know some of the line companies rotated.
No, we were the only Audi battery there.
So you stayed put.
You know, we did patrols every day.
Right.
But we, our position, we did move. We did move to, closer to the beach, after the 23rd. Sometime at the beginning of November, they moved our whole position, almost right on top of the airport.
Okay.
Towards the end where the mountains curve to.
Okay. To the southern end.
Yeah.
All right.
But on, like the night of the 22nd, we got, reports and, intelligence was saying that we may get hit by Syria, Syrian airstrikes. Be prepared for Syrian airstrikes. So
what?
We had to sleep. Well, that's what they told us.
Those intel guys, right? Have they ever been right?
Not that I know of.
Exactly.
It's above my pay grade. But and we even had a CIA guy in our position. They had I'd never seen one before at the time. It was a big Chevy van, but it was four-wheel drive. It looked like a monster truck. It had big monster tires on it, and they had it painted OD green, and, you know, they'd hop in and out of the van and around. You weren't allowed to talk to them, but anyway, we're supposed to get hit by Syrian jets, so we had to sleep on the gun line, which we had GP tents, like behind our guns is where we lived. And then, you know, right out the door is your assigned gun. And, we had to sleep on the gun line that night. And then, you know, about 6:30 in the morning, it's when all hell broke loose.
All right. So you're sleeping on the gun line, and, how far are you from the barracks?
Like I said, we're about 1,200 yards.
And you're down to the south of the barracks?
Right.
Okay. I'm looking at an old image, and it looks like the terminal was kind of near the coast and you can correct
right.
me if it was, it, the barracks was near the coast, next to one lane of the airport, but it wasn't inside the V, it was outside the V.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, I'm
that, that
I'm,
sounds that, that
sounds
all right.
Sounds close.
Yeah, it's been a long time that you know, but
wow.
Some things I never forget. Some things I'm you know, sketchy on. But
all right, I want to ask you about so that morning, it's one of the largest explosions. Conventional explosions since World War II. Right?
Well, we were told
the largest. I've read the largest conventional explosion. Since World War II.
Right. It's like 12,000 pounds of equivalent of TNT, whatever they used.
Sorry. What were you doing when it happened?
Well, I was asleep. We were on a Sunday morning.
Wait! Hold on. I got to take a break. My guest is Matt. Say your last name, Matt.
Gospo Denovich.
But he's known as Gospo to his friends, right?
Gospo, yes, sir.
Right. Speaking the gospel, is that what you do?
especially
late at night?
Too hard to say Gospo Denovich.
Exactly. Gospo. Anyway, Gospo joins us here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio. Right here on the All Warrior Radio Network, and we're talking about Beirut. He was a Lance Corporal at the time. He was in Charlie Battery 110, and kind of where they were, what they were doing, and anticipating Syrian airstrikes that morning. And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the events of that day and the aftermath. So hang in there with us. As we continue, it was the edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Wednesday. hump day in the United States. Game 7 of the World Series tonight. Mike Musselman's birthday. Playing a little country music, so my boy Gospo from Mississippi relaxes.
Right.
Exactly. Don't need him doing anything crazy on the program this morning. Because he does work at a casino, and we know what goes on at those places.
All right.
Gospo, I got a couple emails for you, and we'll get to those in a minute. But before we talk about that morning, so your days in Beirut, if you were QRFing and doing infantry stuff, you were out patrolling, and then
right.
Did you rotate onto the gun line and have days where you were a gun bunny?
Yeah, well, we're always a gun bunny.
Okay.
We would just have, you know, there's the big gun crews, you know, we'd have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys per gun crew. And, each day, you know, the patrols rotated, the react force duty rotated. You'd have 2 or 3 guys from each gun. Today you gotta go on patrol. Tomorrow you're on react. And it would just,
rotate.
If you're in the compound, you're a gun bunny. You know, if you're out the compound, you know, once you walk out the fences, then you're going.
All right. Talk about your day. Talk about going patrolling out in Lebanon, in Beirut. What was that like?
Man, it was, you know, it was, I enjoyed it. Everybody, you know, you want to get out of the fence. You want to get in the shit. You want to, you know, you want to see what's out there and do what we do. I mean, we had some pretty messed up, rules of engagement. Talk to us about it
because, you know, I think it's hard for Marines to believe that you guys operated under that shit. So talk to us about the rules of engagement for a Lance Corporal out on patrol.
Well, you know, inside the compound, you can't have a magazine in. Of course, you know, if we're taking fire or something, then you do what you got to do. But inside, we weren't allowed to walk around with our magazines. We had rounds in the magazines, but no magazines in the weapons. And when we go on patrol, once you get outside the wire, we could put a magazine in the weapon, but we couldn't chamber around. So, you know, when you're walking and you can't chamber around, you start taking fire. If you get some raghead shooting at you with a 45, you can't open up with a 60. You'd have to return fire in kind with a handgun or walk up. But that's the way.
That's
the way they explained it to us.
That's fucking crazy, though. Did you guys think it was crazy, or did you guys ignore it?
Of course. It.
You can say it.
I'm telling you, on patrol, I never got in a firefight on patrol. Any time rounds started coming in and out, we were on our fire base. I didn't. I know the guys, the grunts, you know, in the perimeter of the airport, they were getting hit all the time. I never got in a firefight outside the wire. We returned a lot of fire from inside with the 50s and machine guns and 60s, 50s, 60s. And, of course, we had a lot of fire missions with our howitzers. But we even had a little card. It looked like a little laminated card they gave you with all the rules of engagement written down on it.
Unbelievable. You had to return, like, he shoots at me.
Exactly.
And I've got to shoot at him. Fucking crazy bullshit, man. That's like crazy diplomatic bullshit that you shoot at me, man, you're going to get dead. And whatever we're not going to open up the New Jersey on your ass unless you're up in the mountains fucking with us.
Well,
but
well, we did the Jersey.
Yeah,
man.
I know.
It was awesome to see today.
Hey, what was that like to see?
Well, man, they were shooting right over our fucking head. It sounded like a freight train going over. Those are some big-ass guns. And, I mean, those mountains, you could literally see chunks of mountain disappearing. I mean, it was quite a sight to see.
Supposedly, that's the thing that pissed them the fuck off.
Well, I think we pissed them off a little bit, too, because we shot about 30 white phosphorus rounds one night, and lit up a town, but
started on fire.
Yep, it was pretty awesome too to see at nighttime. It was it was was quite something. You could hear, I'm not going to say that, but you, it was pretty awesome to see.
All right, so you're patrolling, you're operating under these pretty restrictive rules of engagement, and that's daily life. And when it's October, on the day it happens, the Sunday morning it happens, how long have you been there? How long has the BLT been there?
Let's see, we got there in May, I think, beginning of May. So it was getting towards the end of our rotation. We, from May to November, we were leaving in November. So it had steadily gotten worse. When we first got there, you know, nobody shot at us. There was firefights going on all the time between all the different factions. Even the LAF, we saw many times where they were having firefights amongst themselves, different outposts, because we're kind of up on a hill, and you can see right, you know, 200 yards down the road here, they got a roadblock on the highway road. They would check IDs or whatever the fuck they did, and then it was like the tiger team, they called it. It was Lebanese on special forces, which they ran around in a tiger stripe camis, like Vietnam looking shit. And but I saw several times where they got in a firefight with themselves. They're supposed to be on the same side, you know, and but shit started, it got progressively worse. We'd watch the firefights, and then you know, slowly, you know, a stray round would start coming my way, and then shit would be flying all the time. Towards the end, shit got bad. It got pretty bad the closer to the 23rd it got.
All right. So was there, other than the Syrian stuff, the Syrian airstrikes, were you, and there's no other indication that the locals were getting more combative?
Well, like I said, it did, we never knew who, you know, I'm a Lance Corporal, they didn't tell me much. I just know, you know, they shooting at us a lot more than they used to, and you know, we're having a shoot back and getting these bunkers and shit. You know, that was all factionals, the Druze and the Shiites and everybody. We never really knew who the fuck, who's who, or we just, you know, this is out there. Where your barrel's pointing, that's the bad guys. The LAF, the Lebanese Armed Forces, they wasn't much, man. We were supposed to be there to back them up, protect them, and they even sent our battery, I don't recall if they gave them some of our guns or they brought some more howitzers in, and they took a couple guys from each crew, sent them up to the Chief Mountains, and they trained these guys. They put them through a school and everything,
right.
3, 4, 5 weeks, so they could have their own artillery support. And, you know, we trained them, you know, turned them loose. The guys come back. Their first fire mission, they shot a few rounds off, and they ended up getting wiped out by counter-artillery fire. So they killed all of them guys and blew up all our guns.
Wow.
They just wasn't very well trained. I think, it's not politically correct, but all the real men in Lebanese army had been killed a long time ago, and these are just boys and people off the street, it looked like. But,
my guest, Matt Gospodinovich. Did I come close?
Yeah, that's pretty good, man.
All right, thanks. I appreciate that. All right, so we kind of painted a picture. I got an email. I'll ask you real quick. Mac, I'm listening here with fascination, listening to Matt talk about the New Jersey firing. How far off the coast would they be when they fired? Would they be relatively close? And it sounds like it would have been awesome to feel that stuff going over your head and blowing shit up.
It was kind of scary, but it was awesome, man. I mean, you could see the ships. I would imagine they were more than a couple miles offshore. That's a big ass ship, and it looked big from where I was at, and I was on on shore. But it's just a roar. I mean, just a M16 round sounds like when it snaps going over your head. These things were, you know, it was like
Holy shit. But you could see the mountains being rearranged when they impacted.
Absolutely, man.
Wow.
Absolutely. Wow. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's talk about that morning. So it's Sunday morning, and what were you doing, and you know, what were you gonna do that day? What was the plan?
Like I said, Sunday's usually a down day. You know, everybody's got their own, you know, everybody's got duty, but, you know, if you don't have duty, Sunday's a down day. But, like I said, we were on alert that night, stayed up all night. Then they said, I just shut it, you know, just everybody sleep on the gun lines. We gotta be ready for whatever happens. And then, It was like 6:30 in the morning. I was actually just sleeping on an old poncho liner, next to the ammo pit. And it's when it went off, when the explosion went off, it seemed like it lasted forever. I mean, it's noise that it can't be described. I mean, it's like, I don't know if you've been in a thunderstorm or something, lightning hits right outside your window and it booms and everything shakes. Well, it's like that times a thousand. I mean, you could feel it. The ground shook like an earthquake, and it just continued the roar. I mean, it's hard to explain. And I thought, well, these fucking guys, they're dropping bombs on us. I thought it was like a jet, like a Harrier. I know Harriers scream when they come over. That's what I was thinking in my mind. That's a jet screaming over, and they're dropping
right.
shit on us.
Right.
But then, it kind of, you know, dust went everywhere. It flew, knocked people out of the rack. Some guys were sleeping on cots. I was just on the ground. But, you know, and then you jump up and look around. Well, the BLT headquarters building, I mean, you could see it from my position perfectly. It was part of the skyline. It was like a six-story building. This was a big building. And, you know, we looked over there, and it's just a big, giant mushroom cloud, like Hiroshima. It literally was a mushroom cloud like a nuke, you know. And, I mean, it took a minute or so for everybody to, well, what the fuck's going on, so I wasn't even on React Force that day. But I grabbed my shit and I ran to the Amtrak's, and they were loading up, getting ready to go. And I told Lieutenant Kelly, was our platoon commander, I said, look, LT, think about it, you know, let me get in here. He said, Gospo, we're full. Everybody, you know, are you on a React Force? I said, no. And, he had been hearing the radio traffic, from the BLT. And he said, you know, anybody don't want to go, you can get off now. Gospo, jump on. Nobody's going to say nothing. It's pretty bad over there. And somebody got out.
No shit.
Yeah. And I got in, tailgate comes up, and we go.
Wait a minute. So there was no doubt Gospel was going though, right?
Well, man, I wanted to go, man. I mean, that's just, you know, that's why I joined the Marine Corps, to you know, be a Marine. That's what we do.
All right, let me ask you a question about the dude that got out. Is he still around?
I don't even recall who it was. You know, it was just somebody didn't want to go. I mean, I really don't. And nothing was said ever again. I don't, I don't think when I got back I knew who it was. Or at the time I even paid attention to who got out.
Right.
You know,
no, it's
so
just, a, hey, when Marines need help, Marines don't say, yeah, not me today. You know, normally my experience
in
combat, you yell help. Motherfuckers come, and they don't, right. It doesn't matter. Like, just like you got in that truck. Like, I don't know what's over there. I don't know what I'm going to find. But I'll tell you what, if there's Marines there and they need my help, I'm all in.
I don't know, and I thought about telling that story, and not, well, I should, but that's what I'm.
No, I'd say, you know what, this is the great thing about All Marine Radio Gospel. We talk about the truth, what's real, and because we all deal with it, and it ain't easy. But it's, I think it's a place where we come to, you know, to be honest and candid and share our emotions with each other. You get in the truck and go over there, describe what you found.
Right. Well, like I said, it's an Amtrak, man. And, you know, it's closed in, the gate comes up, the back gate comes up, and we hauling ass over there. And you can hear the radio going fucking hate shit, man. I mean, people screaming and cursing and what the fuck. And so it's a very short trip over there. And I got my mind.
Gospel, and that's not how the radio is. Most of the time, all the time.
No,
right?
No, absolutely. No.
The radio is very orderly, right? And now,
exactly.
Now it's gone cuckoo.
People just, you know, it's freaking out. And I got my mind what the BLT looks like. What's gonna, you know, when his tailgate comes down, what is, you know, something's gonna be bad. But we get there, and it was like a movie, man. It's slow motion. I can hear the hydraulics on a tailgate of that Amtrak going down slowly, and it's just like another world. When it hit me like a ton of bricks in the face, like, what the fuck? That's not what I thought I was going to see. It's just complete devastation, a big pile of just rubble where the BLT was. I mean, I could say BLT, that was our headquarters building. That was a big, huge building, and it's just gone. And there's dead bodies, there's hurt people, guys running around with arms cut off, and you know, it's just unbelievable, you know. And I'm ready to jump out, and everybody just stopped and looked for, I mean, you know, for like 10 seconds, and then, you know, it kicks in, and you get out there, and, it's a clusterfuck. Everybody's dead. There's no command and control.
Right.
This is where, you know, all the brass was. All we got, you know, we got LT, we got Lieutenant Kelly, he's on the track here, and he's, you know, y'all stay put, let me find out what's going on. And I mean, we didn't, we just, everybody just spread out and started doing what they could. You started digging through the rubble and helping who you could. I never, you know, I saw some survivors, some guys that were still alive on the outside, but once we started digging, I never found a live person after that. I mean, it was me and Mark Rowley and Arthur Linquito, another couple of Lance Corporals with me, and Art was a small frame guy, and he would like climb through holes, you know, in the rubble and shit, and he'd say, hey guys, I found a guy down here, but he's dead, you know. So me and Mark would go, you know, just pull the rocks and the rubble off until we get him, and had an area where they were putting the bodies, and we drag them over there. And then, man, it was a long day, man.
So the building's essentially pancaked, and you guys are working around the edge of the building, and
all over climbing up. I mean, okay. just you know, the fucking truck made a crater. I mean, it had to be like 20 foot deep and 30 foot across all the way around, where he drove right through the front doors of the place,
right,
before he kicked it off. So, I mean, it was a perfect hit. It, you know, they were finding shit miles away that had blown way up in the air, and the vehicles and shit a mile away that just, those little Jeeps weren't big back then,
right,
you know. And but we, I mean, we were there about 16 hours, I think, before we finally got relieved. They started bringing guys in off the ships that were offshore to relieve us because, you know, we knew a lot of these guys. I found a guy from a battery, Dennis Thompson. He had been there for mess duty, but we found him, his body. You know, so a lot of guys, you know, it takes a toll on you eventually.
Let me just hit pause there on the events of that day and ask you and ask a personal question. Everybody deals with their own shit. Whether you're a Vietnam guy, an Iraq guy, an Afghanistan guy, or some combination thereof, Korea, World War II, and I've talked with guys from all those conflicts. That stuff is burned into your brain forever. The smells of the day, the sounds of the day, the sights of the day. How have you dealt with that, Gospel? I mean, we didn't have PTSD back then. You know, you just you came home and you were supposed to deal with your shit.
Exactly, and I didn't deal with it for a long time. And it's not till I guess social media, Facebook, since I started getting on Facebook. six, seven, 8 years ago, and started connecting with guys from Charlie Banner, guys from the BLT that I was with. Right. I almost, you know, it was like a dream. Nobody knew, you know, we're starting to get more awareness now.
Right.
But back then, nobody, you know, when I came home on leave afterwards, you know, I was just in high school a couple of years ago. I'd be with my guys. What you been up to? I was like, well, I was in Beirut. Well, where's that? You know, nobody knew what the fuck you was talking about and didn't really care, you know. So you just, you internalize shit. I mean, it affected me. I'm cold. I don't, you know, I've been married several times and divorced several times, and it's because I, you know, just the way I've dealt with it. But I have, I've been going to the VA, and they're taking care of me.
They are. How's your experience with the VA, good or bad?
I tell you, you know, I've had nothing but good experience. The Biloxi VA, it's right here in town. I don't have to travel far. I've had I've had good experience with them.
Okay. No, you know, let me just tell you, I think the more guys you talk to, you know, the VA, like every other organization, is dependent upon their people. And in in some places, they have good people doing good work, and they do a lot of great work. And then there's other places that they struggle. So we don't.
Yes, I've read all the horror stories and I've seen it, and it's terrible what how some veterans are treated. And I went in totally expecting, you know, to have to fight, you know, to do battle, but they've. You know, I have nothing but a good experience with the Biloxi VA here, man. So I'm lucky.
Right. Okay. All right. I wanna release the pause button now on that day. So you get relieved after you said what about 16 hours of being at the headquarters?
Right. It was dark by the time. I mean, it was, you know, 6-7 in the morning when I got there, and it was dark by the time we finally got relieved. And it's still for days. It was a clusterfuck because nobody, there wasn't, there wasn't just any, you know, I don't know who was in charge. I don't know how some of the guys that survived, they didn't know where the fuck they was for weeks because you had Red Crescent ambulances from all over. Picking up a guy that's alive, putting him in an ambulance, and just taking him. Nobody knew he was there, gone, whatever. And,
oh, really?
You know, you were hearing, all right, well, so-and-so was in a fucking hospital 20 miles down the road. You know, he just come back, you know. So it was,
wow.
It was, you know. But anyway, we finally got relieved. I remember getting back to the fire base, and I had to go on. I had to pull a duty on a bunker, and me and it's my best buddy in the Marine Corps, Mark Riley. He was right there with me the whole time, and we're just sitting there. And I think that's when the adrenaline finally wore off, and it just everything started, coming down on me. And I mean, you know, I'd never been claustrophobic anything before, but being in that, you know, seeing what had happened, and I'm sitting in this little bunker, I mean, you know, I kind of had a panic attack at some. I started shaking a little bit and getting nervous. And I remember Gunny Quick, Battery Gunny, had come. He was doing rounds, and he told us, he said, Gospel, Riley, I want to tell y'all, y'all did a great job today. Everybody down there noticed what y'all did, and you're the best guys I had. And, you know, and he said, you need to tighten up, Gospel. Don't lose it now. You know, bury that shit. You're a Marine, and, you know, keep doing what you're doing, man. So, and I guess that's what I did. I just buried the shit for a lot of years.
Well, you know what, and that's what the Vietnam guys did. I remember talking to my therapist.
Well, Gunny was an old, dark green Vietnam vet. We loved him, man. I'd follow that man to hell and back. He's a, you know, best staff NCO I've ever served on. He's a good guy.
And what did he tell you about it?
Well, you know, I said, Gunny, that shit was terrible. I never seen nothing like that. And she said, guys, Bo, look, I did 3 tours of 9, and I never seen nothing like that shit neither, man. Just, you know, y'all did a good job.
But, and that was it?
Yeah, that was it. And then, you know, the next day, you just keep on keeping on.
Right, right. No, it's amazing because, you know, I was talking to a therapist, and I said, what do you talk to those guys after all these years? And he looked at me and he said, the same thing I talked to you about. And I said, after all these years? And he looked at me and said, Mac, they never fucking dealt with it. They came home and stuffed it in the jack-in-the-box, shut the lid, and didn't go near the fucking hand crank, man. And I said...
Exactly. And that's what I did. I took, you know, I withdrew. Whenever, you know, I never could get close to anybody or show any emotions or anything. I'm, you know, everybody, gospel, you'd always say, well, gospel's cool. Well, I just never, you know, I was the opposite of bipolar. I never got mad. I never got happy. I never got nothing. I just, you know, because I'm afraid I'd have that, finish having that panic attack I had in that bunker,
right.
You know, when I was 19, 20 years old. That was some horrific shit for a teenage kid to see, you know, when I didn't. Eventually, after many failed marriages, you know, I started listening to what my family was saying. It's like, man, you need to go do something. You're not all right. You know, you need to do something.
You're not all right in the head?
Well, you know, I thought I was, you know, the guy at the VA, I told him, you know, well, I thought I was John Wayne, you know, that's why it took me so long to ask for help. And he said, well, John Wayne was a fucking actor, man. And I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah, gospel, I don't know if you know this, but yeah, that John Wayne was never in the Marine Corps.
I know, man.
Do you know that?
That's good. Yeah.
You know, he never fucking served a day in his goddamn life. I know, but it looked cool as shit.
Yeah, you gotta love it.
John goddamn Wayne. I've got a couple emails for you. Mac, wow, the last corporal's perspective of that day, pretty gruesome. First of all, as a fellow Marine, tell Gospo, God love him, man. Lance Corporal's the backbone of the Marine Corps, getting into that building, looking for people that are alive and pulling out the dead ones. That's the Lord's work, and can't say thanks enough for the Lance Corporals that went and did that day. And we're certainly proud of him and just hope he knows that today. So, Gospel, the little love coming your way.
Well, thank you, man. Semper Fi. That means a lot.
Question for him. How soon did things get somewhat back to normal in terms of a routine, or did he stay on that pile of rubble for a while and work it, or did he head back to the guns?
Well, like I said, it was I was there about 16 hours, and then we went back to the gun line, and they had replaced, you know, by the next day, everybody, all the recovery and the people at Ground Zero there, were another, they called the air alert force in from somewhere, and they had, you know, they had Marines offshore that had been offshore, but they, I'd been back there. I went back there, but not, you know, not for, recovery or doing any, you know, digging for bodies and stuff. They had,
they brought in other guys.
Yeah, they brought in other guys for that, yeah.
Okay, all right. And so you went back to your former employment,
right,
of patrolling,
right,
and being on the guns. All right.
Yes.
Another email. Hey, Mac, awesome interview with Gospo. Loving learning more about Beirut. Also, the Lance Corporal's perspective, always very cool. Question for him. I heard his comment about social media and reconnecting with his guys. Could you talk about that a little bit? Has that helped him being around his friends? Do they ever get together? So, Gospel, those guys that you were around that you mentioned, tighter than tight, yeah? Do you ever get together with them?
Man, I have, like I said, it has been a great help because before the social media, before Facebook, you know, you'd have I had a couple numbers of guys that I'd stay in touch with semi-regularly. But, now, you know, we have there's a Beirut veteran site. There's a Charlie Battery site. There's a there's a new Charlie Battery site for the guys from, you know, Desert Storm all the way up to now that's been in combat and everything, which is, it's cool to look at. You know, these are young kids, but it's still fucking Charlie, man. It's the same charging Charlie and everything. But, I've dozens of guys now that are in a unit and we stay in touch, on Facebook almost daily. I did go, they have the Beirut Memorial in Jacksonville.
Right.
And I made a trip, it's getting on 10, 12, 13 years ago now with a couple guys. And, that was really before, that's just through phone calls and stuff. That's before the social media thing. So and now, for some reason, man, I want to go, but I'm not yet ready to go and see everybody and be at that wall. I can't explain it. I don't know. I talk to them on the phone. I see them, but I don't know. I just don't know. There's something still holding me back.
Go.
From going. But they do. They have a.
No, listen. Hey, listen to me. Go.
I want to, man.
No, don't say another word. Just fucking go.
All right, Mike, I will, man.
All right, let me tell you why. There is no warmer place on the planet than being with your battle buddy. None. You know what I mean? And I've been to Iraq twice and Afghanistan once. There is, and I don't care how long it's been since I've seen them. You walk through the door, you see them, and you know, you start with their nicknames, and all you do is, "What's up, motherfucker?" And it is the coolest. You sit down with a drink and you laugh. And they're your boys, man, forever.
Well, I'm going next year. I'm going.
You got to. Mark it down and go. And let me just tell you, I know October 23rd's got to be a brutal day for you every year, but being in their company, man, will be the best. I promise you.
Well, I'm gonna make the trip again, man. I'm gonna make it this next year. I'm going on the 23rd. I sure will.
All right, another email. Hey, Mac, where's Gospel working? What casino? Maybe I'll bump into him. Where are you working, man?
Golden Nugget Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, man. Come see me.
The Golden Nugget Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi. What do you do at the casino?
I'm a dealer, man. I deal cards, roulette, blackjack.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you give us any?
He's working for a living, man.
Can you give us any advice on that? Is that the?
Don't play. Don't do nothing. You can't win. It's like going to movies, man. It's entertainment. You're never gonna get your $12 back for the ticket. So just enjoy the show, you know.
Okay, so you're going there to have a good time. But
yeah,
but are you kidding me? There's so many dudes, and I'm not a gambler, but I hear them. Oh no, here's my system, and blah 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 blah. And I get here. Go ahead. What?
There's no systems for anything, man. Blackjack maybe, you know, you count cards a little bit, but it's still joints got you behind a ball when you walk in the door, which is kind of funny, man. When you know. Biloxi's always been a gambling town, even before they had legal casinos. They had backroom joints and everything, and so I grew up around it. And when I get to the fleet, man, I mean, in Beirut in opposition, they had a tent that had a crack game going or a blackjack, poker going, just about 24/7. Staff NCOs and everything from all around the BLT would come to our position. They'd go up to the tent and gamble. So it's kind of like I'm still doing what I was doing, man.
Let me just tell you. Now, I don't know. That stuff still goes on. And it should, because there's great camaraderie in those, in those card games. And then even if the guys who are just hanging out in there laughing and having a good time, that's normally a pretty good time. I got a text message question for you. Mac, ask him about falling between a 20-foot snowdrift and a gun shed in Norway in 1984. Talk to me.
Well, yeah, man, that's Sergeant Major Post. Is that Sergeant Major Post or Gunny Smith? One of them. We were in Norway on, I think it had to be that when we had that Liberty, that was that same float. But
that you were in Amsterdam?
Yeah, well, it was that same float, but we were in cold weather training in Norway, and I'm walking next to it. We're all walking next to a damn GP tent, and I mean, I fell in, and I screamed like a little girl, and I'm pretty sure it was Post that grabbed me and kept me from falling in.
You screamed like a bitch?
Yeah, I did, man. I'm sorry. I'm man enough to admit I screamed like a bitch. I don't know when I thought I was going down a crevasse or something, because it was just snow, but I did. He grabbed me and pulled my ass down. Who was that from?
No, I'm not telling you, man. I can't reveal. I can't reveal my sources. We're doing a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio here on the All Warrior Radio Network, and we're talking to Matt Gaspo, and he's a Marine in Lance Corporal. How many times did you make Lance Corporal?
At least a couple, man.
All right. Made Lance Corporal a couple times. And was part of the QRF on the morning of October 23rd, 1983, Charlie Battery, that headed over to the BLT, headquarters that was destroyed that morning. Hey, Mac, I got another email. Mac, when Gaspo looks back on it, is there any lesson learned from that, that he thinks about? Does it piss him off, the situation they got put into, the loss of life, and how has he dealt with that? So would he tell Marines now, would he give them any advice?
Man, we Marines, you know, just go do your job. You know, go out and kill the fucking bad guys when they let you, and be a Marine, man. We, you know, everybody that's a Marine knows what that means. You know, that's way above my pay grade. Should we have been there? Who the fuck knows, man? I go where they send me. You know, I would have done things differently, but, you know, sometimes the diplomacy works, but, you know, I think we should have stayed. I don't think we should have pulled out when we did, but again, man, that ain't my call, you know?
Well, you know what? A lot of guys go through that though. The Vietnam guys, they feel that. That, hey man, we lost 58,000 motherfuckers there, and we pulled the fuck out and said, yeah, you know, our bad, didn't work out. And then, you guys in Lebanon, the guys in Somalia?
Yeah.
They're pissed. And then, and now we're doing the same shit in Iraq and Afghanistan. We go there, we fight.
Just don't tie our hands, man. If you're gonna send the Marine Corps in, release the hounds, take our handcuffs off and let us go do what we do. And I promise you, it will be over quickly, and we can get the fuck out.
Well, you know,
no matter where it's at.
But here's the problem, Matt, is that we can't get the fuck out. Because when you knock over some shit like this, you got, you know, in the American, you know, pottery barn, you break it, you own it. And then we're not leaving right away. And then the American people get tired of it, and they say, oh, we need to leave. Well, then why the fuck did you send us in the first place if you weren't ready to stay here? Just like you guys leaving Lebanon. If this wasn't worth doing, then why the fuck did you send us? And now that we got our nose bloodied, we're going to leave like bitches? Fuck that.
I'm with you, man.
So, no, I think a lot of guys share that frustration. It's like, well, look, you know, we'll do our shit, right? But don't waste the effort. And I think that's the major frustration I hear. And guys say, yeah, I've learned to live with it, but it's bullshit. In my opinion, it's bullshit. There's some leaders in this country, both general officers and politicians, man. You shouldn't be able to do that shit and just walk away from it and write a book.
Yeah.
If you fuck it up, you got to go on Devil's Island someplace out in the Pacific with Amelia Earhart's bones.
Yeah.
That's my view anyway. All right. Gaspo, if you had to, I do this little segment, and I'm going to ask you this question. If I have two sons, one's a lieutenant in 3-5, and one's a captain, who's now a teacher at a basic school. If they were going to war and I said, hey Gaspo, talk to my kids, give them one piece of advice about going to war, fighting for their country, what advice would you give them? Based on your experience,
as officers, lead from the front, man. You enlisted guys, they notice that shit. They know who's bullshit and who ain't, and who, you know, who's a good officer, who's not. You know, lead by example. don't do nothing, show them, you know, don't do nothing, don't ask them to do nothing you wouldn't do. And that's the best thing, you know, just be a good officer, man. Lead from the front.
All right. All right. Gospel, is there anything else that we should know about Beirut that I have not asked you, haven't been smart enough to ask you? That you want people to know?
No, man. I mean, we covered everything. It was, you know, the guys, you know, we're proud of what we did, you know, and just never forget. That's the motto for BLT-18 and 241. That's the body count. You know, just never forget on October 23rd. You know, that's the, you know, more Marines were killed than any time since World War II. At one pop, it was just say a toast, man. Simplify until Valhalla, you know.
All right. Gospel, you don't mind if I give you a call and bring you back on in case we do a gambling segment, do you?
Man, I'm here for you, man. I'm good at that. I can give you some life.
All right. My mom, the first time I went up when I didn't even know that I was of age, but I grew up in Sacramento, which is about 90 minutes from Tahoe.
Yeah.
So go up there and go to a concert and did a little gambling afterward. So I got home late, and next morning my mom's asking me, did you have fun? I said, yeah, it was awesome. She said, that hotel's beautiful, isn't it? I think Harris had built a new one or something. I said, yeah, that's crazy. She said, who do you think pays for that? And I said, I don't know, like Harris does. She looks at me, she said, no. I said, who? She looks at me and she says, suckers like you.
That's the truth, man.
And I said, my mom in our kitchen. I said, what? She said, look at all those buildings, man. Look at Vegas. Look at Reno. Guess what pays for all of it? The money of fools. And I was like, damn, Mom. No, didn't need to go gangster on my ass. But you know what? I know, yes, she was. But you know what? It made sense to me. And I've never, and I had, you know, and I get called, like, I have friends who have their systems and shit like that. Oh, you know, roulette, it's math. All you got to do is do this. I'm like, yeah, look at, Vegas tells me that it ain't math. It might be math, but it ain't good math, man. It's bad math, but.
Like I said, man, it's just entertainment. You can get, you know, most people can go in and have a good time. You know, there are some people that have a problem with it, but fuck, you got drunks and drug addicts and everything else that can't handle, you know, anything in moderation. So, you know, I still enjoy it a little bit, not like I used to, but I've learned a lesson over the years.
All right. Gossip, anything you want to say to your friends that are listening?
I just simplify, brothers. Charlie, man. You know, I'll see y'all in Jacksonville on the 23rd next year.
All right, man. All right, and next year, after you go to Jacksonville, you shoot me a message, and I want to have you back on. I want to get your thoughts on going there. I happened to be going to school. I was an infantry officer. They augmented me to the Marine Corps, and then they told me I had to become a supply officer. And so then I said, oh, I quit. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And but they made me go to school. So I was going to school at Camp Johnston when they built that memorial. And I used to run by it, and I used to stop and look at those guys and you know, and that, you know, the words on that monument, you know, they came in peace.
They came in peace, right?
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. But the more important thing than the monument is you being amongst the warriors of our tribe,
yeah.
Man. And, you know, it's the best. It's the best. So anyway, I want to thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Mike. I really enjoyed it, man. It's kind of therapeutic. I really enjoyed it.
Well, no, let me, I'll just tell you this, what's one of the coolest things about All Marine Radio, other than we can say fuck on the radio, is, and if you can't tell, I like that part of it.
Cool.
Exactly. It's us in our own language. But no, it's guys listen to this from different conflicts. And now they're hearing a guy from Lebanon, Beirut, that went through the same shit that they went through, maybe worse. And man, if that guy is doing all right, then, you know, then I should go get help too. And the goal of all of this is, we don't really talk about it much, is tricking their fucking asses in, don't fucking do it.
No, man.
If you go to that black place, don't fucking kill yourself. Cover down behind us. We'll get you to a better place like we always have.
Just talk to somebody, man. There's hotlines. I had to call a hotline myself that really got me going to get in there, man. And just talk to somebody. Talk to somebody.
And so when people hear you say that, like, fuck, this dude was in that building. And that's the most Marines, you know, like you said, that have been killed at one time since World War II. And maybe, I mean, you know, maybe ever in terms of one, you know.
Right, one.
One attack that have ever been killed in the history of the Marine Corps. And this guy is in the building pulling people out of it, pulling bodies out of it, some of them guys he knows. And if he can do it, well, fuck, I can do it too. And that's the message we want. It's a message of hope. And don't make us go to another fucking funeral, man. Do not do that shit. So, anyway.
Absolutely, man.
All right. All right. God bless you, man.
All right, man. Simplify, Mike. Thanks for having me, bro.
Simplify. Our paths will cross one day.
I hope so, man.
All right. And you can buy me something to eat.
I'm sure, man. Come on down. I'll get you a cup. I'll get you a cup. The burger, man.
No, I don't want that shit. Hey, what's up? Listen to
I got you, man.
I'll get you a comp at the Golden Nugget.
I'll boil you some shrimp, man. How's that?
What? Yeah. What a.
Shrimp, man.
If we go, if I come down there, what do we eat in Mississippi? Shrimp.
Man, shrimp, crabs, crawfish. I mean, we got everything.
What's your favorite?
I love them all, man. Crawfish. You know, just a cold beer, some hot crawfish are good, or boiled shrimp. You know. Corn on the cob and potatoes boiled up. Those are good.
All right. All right. What's Mississippi's signature dish?
Well, man, you know, the coast is a little different. You know, probably barbecue up north. The coast, it's got a lot of New Orleans influence and Mobile. It's a little bit different than the rest of Mississippi. Biloxi is more like a Florida, you know, coastal beach town. There's 26 miles of beach runs across the whole Biloxi coast, so it's more of a resort town. We got a lot of influences, the French, Cajun, and Italian, and we've got a big Asian, Vietnamese population here.
And so what, the northern part of Mississippi is more more tilts towards Tennessee? Barbecue?
Rural type stuff, fried chicken, and you know, a lot of soul food.
All right.
You know, turnip greens and red beans and rice, and it's just it's a big, big, huge melting pot down there.
All right, and then on the coast, more of the New Orleans, the New Orleans,
New Orleans Cajun style stuff, Acadian they call it.
All right. All right, Matt, first of all, I want to thank you very much, and on behalf of everybody listening and all your Marine buddies here at All Marine Radio, thank you very much for doing it. God bless you, man. Hang in there, and we'll do this again.
I'd love to. All right, thanks, Matt.
All right, bud. Take care. There you have it. Lance Corporal on multiple occasions. Matt Gospodinovich, right, being part of a QRF at Beirut. You know, I mean, it's crazy how fate lines you up, you know, that you come from. He comes from Mississippi, and he winds up there, and, well, that morning. So, crazy stuff. You know, I was actually looking at the barracks. And if you look at it from Google, I think you can see where the barracks was, and it wasn't the terminal, it was down the road from the terminal. But I'm not exactly sure, because there's still, it looks like the imprint of a building. So, anyway, I'd be curious because I can't find an aerial image of it. All the shots you see of it are from the ground, which make it difficult if you Google it. It's on the corner of a building, and it looks like you can see the coastal. It looks like you can see the coastal portion of the runway in the distance. So there's the coast, there's a strip of houses, there's a runway, and then there's buildings. There's another road which I believe leads down to the airport itself, and just not easy to. I'm trying to put it all together, and not easy to do because there's not one wide shot of it. But anyway, so looking for it on Google Earth, a little bit problematic. So if anybody does have a wider shot that makes more sense, send it to me. You can send it to live.allmarineradio@gmail.com. But I want to thank Gospo for coming on. And Gunny Smith for setting that up. Very, very cool stuff. And as he said, therapeutic for him in a way to talking about it. But again, it allows us to highlight, All Marine Radio and what it is and what we want. And more than anything, what we want is. When you go to a dark place, when you feel that, don't go there. Do not go there. Pick up the phone, get in touch with your friends, all of that. So we continue. We're going to take a quick break.
So that was an interview with Matt Gospodinovich. Gospo was killed a year ago. And he's a bigger than life character, man. You hear his laugh. You hear him talking about Cajun food. Come on down. I'll get you a comp at the Golden Nugget. He's just one of those guys who you cross paths with that makes you laugh and make you feel good about yourself. And then you hear about his struggle in his life. And I think he's extremely emblematic of this whole post-traumatic winning thing. It's guys like him that have taught me so much. And so on this day, when we remember 273 Marine sailors and soldiers that were killed in Beirut, Lebanon, the nation's first real huge, terrorism event, a day that, echoes, in Marine Corps history. And in particular, for those of us who were on active duty when it happened, just a stunning realization of what had happened, and then all the different layers of that went into that happening, and how frustrating it was, and the situation they had been placed in, and all of that. And to me, Gospel is emblematic of all those Marines. You hear his toughness, and it inspires me. And so I wanted you to hear his voice today. It's an awesome interview and one of my favorites that I've ever done. And I would tell you, sadly, I'm a poor person for it, but I never got to meet Matt, before he passed away. And so, but God bless him. We remember him today. And Charlie Battery, 1st Battalion, 10th Marines, and all the Marines from BLT 1-8 and the 24th Mute. So as is our custom on days like today, we go out the door, we play Eternal Father, the Marine Corps hymn, and then we end this with taps and a 21-gun salute, as we would normally do that. So this is dedicated to the Marine sailors and soldiers who lost their lives 37 years ago today in Beirut, Lebanon. It's also dedicated to their families who have paid the price for it and their friends who live without them. And may God hold you in the palm of his hand, and may he keep that hand close to his heart. You know, in spite of its beauty, the way we do honors, man, I hate that shit. So, on that note, have a great weekend. Don't be afraid to change somebody's life. And that's the only way you get from a bad place to a great place is unselfishly give of yourself and make somebody's life better and watch, in fact, how that transforms your own life. So we'll take a quick break right now. When we come back, the start of the show consisted of the Commandant of the Marine Corps speech this morning. He did it via video that he and the Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps spoke at. And he spoke on for the 37th commemoration of the events that happened in Beirut when our barracks was blown up on October 23rd, 1983. And then if you just tuned in for the second part of or you caught halfway or part of the gospel interview without any further ado, you'll hear that as well. So have a great weekend. Alex Hollings joins us on Monday. I think Grant Newsham's going to join us next week as well. And then I believe the author of When the Tempest Gathers, he's going to join us as well. So, yeah. All of that jammed into 1 week. So have a great weekend. This program begins again momentarily.